Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Zion and Mudbet, two lines from the bottom. The Gemara now is questioning what we brought in the bright yesterday, which is Rabbi Meir's position. V'savar Rabbi Meir kol erva shebeitin shel Yisrael me'mitin alea ben Noach mushar alea, that any erva that in a Jewish beitin they would put to death a Jew for violating that erva, then a ben Noach is restricted in that erva. So he draws an equation which says that if a Jew would be put to death for such an erva by a Beit Din, which means that it's a chiyuv skila, then a ben Noach is muzar ala, then a ben Noach is restricted in that erva. Bahatanya, but we have a brayta that indicates otherwise. Ger shaita horato shelo bikdusha, veleidato bikdusha. A ger, a convert, who was conceived before his mother converted, but was born after his mother converted. Now, there are two things to discuss over here. First of all, why is that important? Rashi later on will say, V'hu adin v'horato v'leidato shelo bikdusha. Rashi will say that the fact that he was conceived when she wasn't a Jew and born when she was a Jew is the same or has the exact same din as the case where he was conceived while she was a goya and born while she was a goya. The same din applies over here. And that's because of the general principle, which is called ger shenigayer kekatan shenolad dami. That any ger that converts is considered to be like a newborn baby and severs all familial relationships that they had until then. All blood relationships that they had no longer exist. So Rashi says it's irrelevant whether the baby, like we have here, was conceived before the gerut and born after the gerut, or whether the baby was conceived and born before the gerut. Because of the gerut, it severs all relationships, and therefore the din that we are going to say here is equally applicable. He says it comes to exclude a case where horato vileidato bikdusha, where he was conceived after the conversion and born after the conversion. In that case, these dinim would not be true, not because their being a full-fledged Jew changes anything, because they are part of a family that converted or a mother that converted. It severs all relationships that they had prior to that point in time. So even though they're born after the conversion, that doesn't make any difference because they have no relationships outside of his, obviously, mother who has converted, and he was conceived and born at that point in time. But Rashi says, in that instance, came into Dami Leil Yisrael, because he's so similar to a Jew, Gozer Bei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir over there was Gozer Dilma Ati Lechlufe Bei Yisrael. Because maybe you'll confuse him with the Israel, and therefore he says that Rabbi Meir in that case would be gozer about an av, an aim, everything. We'll see what he says otherwise. But Rashi says that there are three different possibilities. One possibility is that he was conceived and born prior to the conversion. There's our case here, which is he's conceived before, born afterwards. Then there's a case where he's both conceived and born after the conversion. Rashi says that the din of conception and birth before the conversion, in our case here, of conception before the conversion, birth after the conversion, are identical. Whatever din we're saying now in the Braita would be true in that other case as well. The case where it would be different is the instance where he was conceived and born after she converted already. In that instance, even though technically the dinim should all be the same, nevertheless, we are goes there because ate lech lufe. Because you might confuse him with the regular Yisrael. That brings us to the two gzeirot that apply over here in terms of a conversion. When a goy converts, even though he's kiger kekatan shenolad dami, nevertheless, there are two institutions that were put in place by the Rabbanon, one of which is that if he would have been asur in this erva prior to the conversion, we'll make him asur in that erva post the conversion, even though technically they have no relationship anymore. The conversion severed the relationship, and there is no erva. Despite that fact, the Rabbanon imposed the erva, so that the person shouldn't say, ba'im me kdusha chamura l'kdusha kala. So it shouldn't be, or seem like, they had more restrictions before they converted, less restrictions after they converted. The idea of converting is that you're upgrading. You're going from being someone who was chayav in Sheva Mitzvot Ben Noach to someone who's chayav in Taryag Mitzvot. So there's an upgrade in the Kedusha, an upgrade in obligation. What we don't want to happen is that he moves from being a goy to being a Jew, and in that process, all of a sudden, all these arayot become mutar to him. In order to prevent that from happening, we are gozer in any one of the arayot that he would be restricted in while he was a goy, we'll also restrict him in as a Jew after the conversion, even though technically midoraita, there's no such erva. Secondly, like Rashi notes over here, we also worry about ate dechlufe, that we worry about him getting confused with the regular Israel, and therefore if we permit certain arayot to him, it might have influence on a regular Jew where those arayot are not permitted. And so we'll be gozer in certain instances on arayot. So those are the two gzerot that apply in these situations, number one. And number two is the three categories of what the status of this ger is, depending on conception and birth, where they were in the process of the conversion. That's Rashi's view of the Gemara. The Baalei HaTosafot disagree, and he quotes Rashi, it's on the previous Amud, and says, the Tosafot says, the Yishlamar Ipcha. Tosafot says, I want to say just the opposite of Rashi. Da'adarabha, Keva and Dehorato, Vileidato Bikdusha. Since he was conceived and born Bikdusha, Harihu Ki Israel. He is like a full-fledged Israel. Umutar. And therefore he's mutar filu ba'achoto minayin. Even from his sister through the common mother, Shinodu Mikodem, that were born before the conversion, Lekala Migzar. Over there, there's no reason to make a gzeira at all, because they're not going to say that they came from Kedusha Chumra, the Kedusha Kala. Because since there is no tzad psul to him, and it is clear like as if there were two mothers here, it's as if there was a clear split, a clear delineation here, and so therefore you won't say that at one point he was a Ben Noach, now he's a Jew. He was never a Ben Noach, he was always a Jew. And therefore the status of him vis-a-vis his siblings that were born before the conversion is as if there's a line that delineates between them, and there's going to be no confusion about the fact that he's coming from Kedusha Chamura, going to Kedusha Kala, because he never was in the status of Kedusha Chamura, because he was never had the status of a Ben Noach. Therefore, he says, unlike Rashi, who thinks that's a problem, because Ate Lechlufe B'Yisrael, Tosafot says, not at all. This is a clear delineation, and there's no problem here whatsoever. And then he said, V'yoshe Elmar, Dorato V'leidato B'Kedusha Nami, even in the case where he was born and conceived and born Bikdusha, Nami Kachtino, that the din would be exactly the same. Va, Delo Nakte, the Rebuta, Yishum Delo Psikale. And the reason that the Breita doesn't mention it is because it's not as clearly delineated, because there, you have to speak about when the siblings were born. Suppose the case where he's conceived Shlo Bikdusha and born after the Kedusha, then we can make a blanket statement about his status, because he was part of the conversion process. And therefore, there's no she'era av for anyone born before and after the conversion. On the other hand, in a situation in which he is conceived and born after the conversion, over there it will matter when his siblings were born. If they were born prior to the conversion, ein ochanami, the din would be, according to Tosafot, the same as what's found in our Braita. But if they were born after the conversion, then they would be related because they're born to the same mother and the same father. When the mother had already converted, that means that they are brother and sister. And then the Braita would have to differentiate as to when the siblings were born vis-a-vis this individual. But here, the way that the Braita has it set up, that he was conceived before the conversion and born after the conversion, he himself is a ger then. And so it doesn't matter when the siblings are born, before or after, he has no relationship with them. Mitzad ha'av, because he is a ketan, shnolad dami, along with his mother, and then he has no relationships or no blood relationships. So Tosfot gives two possibilities as to the case that Rashi thinks everything is nigzar, which is horato, vileidato bikdusha. Tosfot gives two possibilities, either that it's mutar legamre, because there's nothing to get confused about, there's no questions, there's clear delineation, or he says the din will be the exact same din as the Braita, just we didn't write it because you would need to differentiate between siblings before and before the conversion and siblings born after the conversion. So now, this individual, Batanya Ger Shaitaurato Shalo Bikdusha, Vileidato Bikdusha, Yeshlo She'era Aim, Painlo She'era Av. Relationships through the mother are considered relationships. Relationships through the father are not considered to be relationships. Now over here, as the Rashi points out, the Baalei HaTosafot point out, it doesn't literally mean mother and father here. It means any relationship that is generated by a mother. So that means if he has siblings through a common mother. If he has aunts through a common mother. I mean that his father and the aunt share a common mother. So it can even be on the father's side of the family. It's just that the relative is a relative because they share a common mother. But if they are a relative because they share a common father, over there, we don't consider that to be she'er, we don't consider that to be arayot. Ha ketzad. Give us examples. What is the story with that? Nasa choto min ha'em, yotzi. If he had married his sister through a common mother, yotzi, he has to divorce her, or we force him to dissolve this relationship. Min ha'av, if it's his sister through a common father, yikayim, then he can keep the relationship. Because there is no Isser Achva v'bnei Noach. For b'nei Noach, the only restriction is through the aim, not through the father. So as opposed to Bayadut, where the father is, in most cases, the determining factor in terms of relationships, for b'nei Noach, it's the mother that determines the relationships. And so, since if it was his sister through a common mother, ben Noach would be restricted in it. So over here, we're also gozer to say that he can't keep such a relationship. On the other hand, if it's a sister through a common father, whereby a ben Noach, that's not restricted, then when he's converted and it's still not restricted, we say that it's not problematic and he can remain married to this woman who is his sister. Achot ha'av min ha'em. If his aunt, meaning that his father's sister, through a common mother, yotzi, he's married to his aunt, and the aunt is his aunt because she shares a common mother with his father, then he can't keep that relationship. Mina'av, yikayim. On the other hand, if it's his aunt through his father's sister, but they share a common father, not a common mother, there he can keep the relationship or he can stay married to his aunt. Achotayim mina'im. If it's an aunt through his mother, it's his mother's sister, if they are sisters through a common mother, yotzi, then they cannot remain married. Achotayim mina'av. If it's his mother's sister, his aunt, but they are sisters through a common father, Rabbi Meir Omer yotzi. Rabbi Meir says over there, you cannot keep that alive. Chachamim Ramim yikayim. And Chachamim say you can keep it, no problem. Chachamim are consistent with everything we said until now, which is only relationships that involve a mother that joins the relatives are problematic. So the Chachamim are consistent with everything we said here. Here, Rabbi Meir breaks from that and says that anything that involves an aim, a mother, is problematic. Shai Rabbi Meir, kol erva shehi mishum b'shera aim, yotzi mishum b'shera av yikayim. Because Rabbi Meir says that anything that is a relationship through a mother. Now, through a mother, now, it doesn't mean what we've said until now, which means that they are brother and sister through a common mother. It means even things that come up through the mother line. So that means that his mother's sister, even though they share only a common father, those two sisters, but since it's his mother, and the sister is his sister through his mother, that, according to Rabbi Meir, is also problematic. Anything that involves the mother is problematic. So Rabbi Meir has a broader definition of what's considered share a aim versus the chachamim. Chachamim, it's literal. Share a aim means if you're a relative, because you share a common mother. According to Rabbi Meir, that's true, but also if it comes through the mother's side of the family, it's also problematic. Mutar, Beishet Achiv, he is no problem marrying his brother's wives, Beishet Achei Aviv, or his uncle's wives, meaning that his aunts through marriage, or his sisters-in-law through marriage, Bishar Kol Arayot Mutarot, and any other erva would be totally fine for him. Now Rashi points out in all these cases is, as after they passed away. Obviously, he can't marry his brother's wife while they're still married. It's only after the brother passes away, then he can marry because there's no such thing as eshet achiv. It would seem to me, although Rashi doesn't say this, that it would be true if there was a divorce as well. Because all you have to do is sever the relationship of eshet ish, and then there's no erva of eshet achiv, even if they share a common mother. Even if these two brothers share a common mother, nevertheless, the conversion makes it that there is no relationship anymore, and any relationship through marriage doesn't exist. Dein eshet ach libnei Noach. Because according to Bnei Noach, there is no such restriction. So since when he was a non-Jew, there wasn't a restriction, When he converts, we're not going to impose the restriction on him now because he's a kikatan shenolad dami, and he has no relationship with these individuals. All right, so now, all these scenarios where we said before, you'd see, the reason he was able to marry this sister, this aunt, is because they were all born prior to the conversion. Since they were all born prior to the conversion, during that process of conversion, it severs the relationship that was there. And in all senses, he could marry such a woman. Even if the sister herself converts, it still doesn't change the fact that he is not related to that sister after the conversion. If he takes her as a wife, we will reject that if they share a common mother because of the fact that if he had remained a Ben Noach, she would be restricted to him. As Rashi said before, we don't want people coming along and saying they're coming from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. The things are getting easier when you become a Jew rather than upgrading or maintaining the Kedusha that you had with a Ben Noach. The reason Nasach Utom Minaim Yotzi is for that reason that Rashi notes, and Balei Tosafot reiterate that. Though Rashi in Yevamot gives a different reason. Rashi in Yevamot says, Perisha Kutris Tainu Taima, Tachotom Minaim Yotzi. Why do you have to divorce a sister where you share a common mother? Because maybe he'll marry a sister that is born after him. Deika isura de oraita, where there is a problem in the Torah. Mashma loto aperush dehorato veledato shelo b'kedusha lekalameshelas isura. That implies if he was both conceived and born prior to the conversion, then we never have a problem of an isur de oraita with a sister, even with a sister born subsequent to that point. See, if he was orato shelo b'kedusha and he was born b'kedusha, or both things happen b'kedusha, then you're right, a sister born afterwards is a full-fledged sister mido oraita. If they're full-fledged sister mido oraita, then you would have a problem if he marries his sister that was born post the conversion. So if he goes there, the sister prior to the conversion, also the sister after the conversion. What Tosafot points out is that presents a problem, which is if he was both conceived and born before the conversion and then converted, in that case you can never have an isur d'oraita. Any sister born before that point in time, he's not related to. Any sister born after that point in time, he'll never be related to because he himself converted as well. And therefore, he's a katan shenolad dami, and he has no relationship to his mother. And so obviously he'll have no relationship to any sister born afterwards. And Tosafot says, that would then permit you to marry your sister or keep the sister via Shalomarkin. He says it's impossible to say that because of the Gemara in Yevamot indicates otherwise. So he says that the main reason is because of what Rashi says here, is that you're coming from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala, and not because of this Gzera Mishum Deoraita. But then Tosafot goes on to say that actually you need both issues. Both the issue of Shelo Tavo Mikdusha Chamura Mikdusha Kala, as well as Atile Achlufe, that they might get mixed up with a regular Jew. For both of those reasons, we are Gozer by a Ger. And so there are instances one is applicable, instances where the other is applicable, instances where both are applicable. Only when both of those are not applicable, do we say that the goy or the ger can keep the person that they are married to? And in that way, none of the instances that Rashi mentions that have karet associated with them and Rabbi Eliezer says are problematic are really a question in terms of the stira between the brightot, because you could argue in all of those cases, the reason we make them asurim is because atilech lufe, he'll get mixed up with the regular Israel. It doesn't say me'ikar adin that there is a problem. And so therefore, Tosafot says that the real question comes from things that are me'ikar adin. The question of Rabbi Meir is from the fact that the Braita says that he's mutar be'eshet aviv u'bechamoto. That how can he be mutar be'eshet aviv u'bechamoto apagav the beitin shel Yisrael me'mitim aleihem? Even though a beitin shel Yisrael would be me'mit, then nevertheless it says there that it's mutar. So why should it be mutar if a beitin is me'mit? Nasa isha u'bita. So in an instance where he's married to a woman and her daughter, kones achat umotzi achat, he can keep one of the two, but he has to release the other one. I mean, he can't be married to a mother and a daughter. Rashi over here says that the case that we're speaking about in this instance in the Mishnah is a shar gerim kai. This is speaking about other gerim, not the situation that we're speaking about here, where he was conceived Shelo Big Dusha, born Big Dusha, but a regular gear. Kishinasam Bioto Kuti. He married them when he was not Jewish. When he's not Jewish, he was permitted to marry a mother and a daughter. And then he converts along with them. He cannot remain married to Ishal Bita, even though while he was a goy, it was completely permissible. So you don't get to keep them after the conversion, even though technically you're not related anymore. Nevertheless, we don't allow him to stay married to Isha Ubita. That's one way Rashi writes it. Inami ahakai. Or maybe it's similar to our case over here. Mushum da'ach gioret kamar. Bo'odin Israel gamur. And the conversion here is not being about the man's side, but the women's side. If a mother and daughter converted, then technically when he marries them, he's not marrying relatives. They are not related anymore. Or, similarly, even if Yisrael Gamur went to marry them, it doesn't have to be a ger. That would be fine also because they are no longer related. Because they both converted, they also, when they marry someone, there's no restriction of Ishal Bita. Despite that fact, again, we require him to keep one and release one because of the Kedusha, Chamurat Kedusha Kala. That beforehand, that Ishal Bita is not acceptable in terms of remaining married once you're a Jew. Ulechatchila lo yichnos. Bechatchila, in all these cases, the way that Gemara learns in Yivamot, all these cases before we said yikayim, once he's married, we're not going to make them separate. If he comes to ask us up front, we will tell him not to marry. So if he comes with his sister, and they share a common father, if he is already married to her, we're not going to force them to separate. But if he comes to Beit Din and says, can I marry her? We would say, that's no, it's not a good idea. Don't marry your sister, even though technically there is no Isur over here. Not because of Erva, because it's a conversion, Katan Shenolad Dami, and not because of Zera Derabanan. Because here the relationship is through the father and not the mother. Neither of those apply, but nevertheless we'll advise him not to do that. Meta Ishto. If his wife passes away. So he converted, kept his wife after he converted. She must have converted with him. But once his wife passes away, then he can marry his mother-in-law, because Ben Noach, lo muzara chamoto. Ben Noach is not restricted in mother-in-law. So now there's no reason to restrict the mother-in-law to him. In terms of Erva, it doesn't exist, because he's converted. And so there's no longer any relationship between him and his mother-in-law, because his wife converted along with him. So all those relationships fell away. And now, once his wife passes away, the mother-in-law is as if a third party to him. He has no relationship to whatsoever. And you won't have the gzeira if he's coming from Chamura to Kala, because for Ben Noach, it's not restricted. So then there's no reason to restrict it. Similar to the case of Isha Bita, where we wouldn't allow you to do that, even though technically if they both converted, they're not related. And even though it's not a surbe Ben Noach, we're not going to let him, as a Jew, keep Isha Bita. And similar here, Ishto v'chamuto, we're not going to let him marry his chamuto unless his wife passes away. But once his wife passes away, there's no reason to restrict him. It wasn't a surbe Ben Noach. It wasn't a sur to him now. So now that his wife is out of the picture, chamuto becomes muteret. Ika d'amre asur v'chamuto. There's some people who say that he may not marry his mother-in-law. Now remember, our whole question here derives from the fact that Rabbi Meir says that if it involves a mitat beit din for a Jew, then a ben Noach is muzarale. Then a ben Noach has a restriction. Now, we just read a braita that has numerous arayot that Rabbi Meir is noting. And all those arayot are because it would be restricted to a ben Noach. And many of those arayot are not subject to a death penalty in Beit Din. Those arayot that are subject to karet, including achoto, achot aviv, achot imo. All those don't have a punishment of mita b'Beit Din. They have a proper punishment of karet. Despite that fact, they're all restricted here, according to Rabbi Meir, where goes there on the ger, because they're restricted when he was a ben Noach. Given that, it seems to be a stira in Rabbi Meir's position. Tosvot says that the question from the Braita is not like what Rashi says over here. Cases of Achoto, Achot Aviv, Achot Imo. But rather, the question of Rabbi Meir is from the fact that the Braita says that he's mutar be'eshet aviv u'bechamoto. That how can he be mutar be'eshet aviv u'bechamoto afgav the Beit Din shel Yisrael memitim aleihem? Even though a Beit Din shel Yisrael would be memit, then nevertheless it says there that it's mutar. So why should it be mutar if a Beit Din is memit? Am Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha, that's not a problem. Ha Rabbi Meir alibed de Rabbi Eliezer, ha Rabbi Meir alibed de Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir is both a Talmud of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Titania, and now we'll explain what that means. Al kein yazov ish et aviv ve'et imo. So the pasuk that's spoken to Adam Rishon about marrying Chava is that then a man will leave his mother and his father. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, aviv, what does it mean that he's going to leave his father? Achot aviv, his father's sisters, his aunts. Imo, achot imo. Those are his mother's sisters, his aunts through his mother. Those are then restricted to him. V'kiv Omer, aviv. Aviv means ished aviv, is restricted to him. Imo, imo mamash. His mother means literally his mother. V'davak. So now the pasuk continues. Okay, yazov ish et aviv et imo, v'davak b'ishto. So now the Gemara is going to explain. V'davak means v'lo b'zachar. Davak means that he gets together and not with another male. This is the restriction against homosexuality. Rashi over here explains the reasoning behind that is that the davak implies something that draws them together. Something that binds them in a certain way. And Rashi says over here, both parties have to have pleasure from the intercourse in order for it to be something that creates devek, a relationship that joins them together. Without that devek, without that hana'ah to bring them together, then that's not called vidavak. So in a case where only one of the two parties gets hana'ah, then in that situation it's not called davak, and that's why it precludes a case of mishkab zachor. And then, be'ishto, he will then get together with his wife, velo be'ishet chaveiro, and not with his friend's wife. This is a restriction against ishet ish, for the Bnei Noach. Vayud basar echad, and this is the final part of that pasuk, and then they will be one. Mish nasim basar echad. Only a relationship that results in a singular output from them. Atzu behema v'chaya she'nasim basar echad. That comes to exclude bestiality, whereby there is no production, there's no ability to create. So by a husband and a wife, their relationship produces an offspring, where they are basar echad, where they are joined together. When it comes to animals, there will be no joining because there will be no offspring that can be born of that relationship. And therefore it precludes the beima and chaya, or bestiality. So over here you have the restrictions on a ben noach. Both of them agree with regards to bestiality, homosexuality, and ish, that those are restricted. The question is, when it comes to imo and aviv, what does that restrict? Rabbi Eliezer says that aviv v'imo restricts the aunts. That means his father's sister and his mother's sister. Those are what are restricted. Rabbi Kibo says, no, that's not the case. Father refers to eshet aviv, his father's wife, and imo refers literally to his mother. And in that way, they will have a different view as to which arayot are restricted for a ben noach. Now remember, our whole question here derives from the fact that Rabbi Meir says that if it involves a mitat beitin for a Jew, then a ben noach is muzharale. Then a ben noach has a restriction. Now, we just read a braita that has numerous arayot that Rabbi Meir is noting. And all those arayot are because it would be restricted to a ben noach. And many of those arayot are not subject to a death penalty in beitin. Those arayot that are subject to karet. It seems to be a stira in Rabbi Meir's position. The Gemara answers that's not a problem because Rabbi Meir's position is depending on who he's quoting. He's quoting his two Rebbeim. One is Rabbi Eliezer, one is Rabbi Akiva. So when he's following Rabbi Akiva's position, then he says that the statement that we saw in the Braita from yesterday, that anything that involves a death penalty in Beit Din, that's what's restricted to a Ben Noach. Because all the cases here that are mentioned, case of Rabbi Akiva, are things that are subject to a death penalty by Beit Din. Mishkab Zachor and bestiality are both subject to Skila. Eshet Ish is subject to Chenek. And then you had Eshet Aviv and Imo. Both are subject to punishments or Chayav Mitot Skila. So over here, all those that are mentioned are subject to Mitat Beitin, according to Rabbi Akiva. And those are the restrictions. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he includes ants in the picture. Father's sister, mother's sister, as Rashi notes, kol shekein achoto, certainly his own sister would be restricted, and those are not subject to mitat beitin, those are subject to karet, and yet Rabbi Eliezer is including them. So what we're saying is that Rabbi Meir in the Braita that we brought yesterday is Rabbi Meir in the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, telling us that only things that are mitzvah beitin for a Jew would be what B'nai Noach are restricted in. Whereas the Braita that we brought today, which includes many other categories, including your aunts through your mother and your father when they share a common mother, sister when you share a common mother, that is Rabbi Meir Aliba de Rabbi Eliezer, who says it's not only by mitzvah beitin, even by karet, there will also be included in the restrictions of B'nai Noach. So that's the question from the Braita, and that's the solution to the problem, which is, it's Rabbi Meir in both cases, but Rabbi Meir following his two different Rebbeim. In one Braita, he's following Rabbi Kiva, that was yesterday's Braita. Today's Braita, he's following Rabbi Eliezer. Tosfot goes on to explain, remember we mentioned before that there are two reasons why you might restrict certain arayot. One reason is because of, shouldn't say they're coming from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. The other reason is Shelo Ate Lechlufe, that they don't get confused in Beis Yisrael. In the end, the Balei Tosafot explain that actually you need both reasons. And you need both reasons. Meaning that part of the restrictions that are found in our Braita are because of, we don't want you to say Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. But there are also certain cases where the problem is Ate Lechlufe, you make it confused with Yisrael. And that's why Tosafot says then, based on that, then the ants in the Braita are not indicating that they are a sword to B'nai Noach, because it's only because we might get him confused with the Yisrael that everything goes there. And in the other instances where it's Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. So then, once you've done that, it's not restricted to a Ben Noach, then there's no question from that Braita on Rabbi Meir. And that's why the Balei Tosafot suggests that the question of Rabbi Meir is actually not from the restriction of the ants or the restriction of the sisters, but rather from the permission to marry Eshet Aviv and permission to marry the mother-in-law, which are subject to death penalties in a Beit Din Yisrael, and yet here we're permitting it and saying there's no problem. So the fact that we're saying no problem means that we think that's not restricted to a Ben Noach. And that's the question on the previous Braita. And the answer is the difference between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer, who has certain arayot that are restricted, but Rabbi Akiva, who thinks that it's connected to the mitat Beit Din, will have a different list of arayot. And Rabbi Akiva's list will include Chamuto and Eshet Aviv, because he thinks it's connected to mitat Beit Din, because the examples that are given in the Pasuk have to do with mitat Beit Din. And therefore, if you're going to extrapolate to other arayot, it's all going to be about mitat Beit Din. Rabbi Eliezer limits it to those arayot that are found in the Pasuk that we learn from, but there's no common denominator between them. They could be Chiyuv Karet, they could be the Chiyuv Mitat Beit Din, but there's no common denominator. It's whatever the Pasuk includes are considered arayot. What the Pasuk doesn't include are not considered to be arayot. Although Rashi does mention the possibility that Rabbi Eliezer would distinguish between Erva of Achva and Erva of Ishut, where the Erva of Achva would be problematic versus the Erva of Ishut that would not be problematic. Although on the next Amud, Rashi seems to indicate that Rabbi Eliezer does not extrapolate any of the dinim that he says in the Braita. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Mar, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Aviv, Achot Aviv. Rabbi Eliezer says that when it says Aviv in the Pasuk, it comes to restrict your aunt through your father. Ema Aviv Mamash. Why doesn't he just say, I mean, literally your father? Hainu B'dabak V'lo B'zachar. You already have that in the remainder of the Pasuk, that there's a restriction against homosexuality. It can't be literally the father then. Ema Eshet Aviv. Why don't you say that it's his father's wife? Hainu B'ishto V'lo B'eshet Chaveiro. That we already covered because of adultery would involve any marriage, including the marriage of his father. So I don't need Eshet Aviv if I already have Eshet Chaveiro. Ema La'achar Mita. Wait a minute. Why don't you say here that it's coming to restrict Eshet Aviv even after his father passed away? Even after his father's passed away, that the Eshet Aviv would be restricted. That's the halacha for a Jew. Maybe the same should be true for a Ben Noach. And the reason you need Eshet Aviv is not because Eshet Ish, you're right, is when he's alive. But after he passes away, she's still considered Eshet Aviv. Maybe that's why you need it. He says, Dumya di Imo. Because the Pasuk compares Aviv to Imo. Ma Imo de la Vishut. Af Aviv de la Vishut. The case by his mother is a case where there is no marriage issue. Meaning that the reason his mother is restricted is because she is his mother. So too, by the father, the restriction is going to be because of his father and not because of the marriage. So now the Gemara says, Imo, Achot Imo. with a mother, you learned that it meant his mother's sister or your aunt through your mother. Veima imo mamash. Why don't you say it's referencing directly to his mother? Hainu v'ishto. Velobeshet chaveiro. That's a case where she's married, and that would be, so why would you need imo if it's already restricted from marriage? Veima lachar mita. So why don't you say it references the case after death? After the husband passes away, that his mother remains restricted. Dumya de aviv. Ma'aviv de lav mamash. Afimo de lav mamash. Just like we already were doresh, that the father is not literally the father. So also over here, we're going to learn that the mother is not literally the mother. So that's how Rabbi Eliezer gets to his drashot from here. He says it can't be father and mother directly because those are already covered by other aspects here. Father's covered by Mishkav Zachor. Mother is covered by Ishanish. So since those are already covered, it can't be literally speaking about Aviv and Imo. So the option then is to say that it's speaking about the father's sister and the mother's sister. And in both instances, we rejected suggesting that it would be after Mitah, meaning that once you release them from the Ishanish aspect of it, then the restriction would still exist. We rejected that in both cases because Imo is a restriction that has nothing to do with marriage. And so therefore we said that marriage is not the issue over here. It's the problem is the erva itself and not the marriage that generates it. For that reason, we're not speaking about Ishud Aviv after death or Imo after the death of her husband, but rather we're speaking about the father's sister and the mother's sister. And that's where Rabbi Lezer learns the Limud. We give him Aviv, Ishud Aviv. Aviv refers to the father's wife. Veima Aviv Mamash. Why don't you say it's referring to the father himself? Hainu b'davak v'lo b'zachar. So that we already covered because plus of homosexuality. Iochi ishet aviv nami hainu b'ishto v'lo b'ishet chaveiro. Wait a minute. If you're going to say it's already covered by the pasuk, then ishet aviv is also already covered by ishet ish. So why do you need ishet aviv? Lachar mita. Rabbi Kiva says for after death. Rabbi Kiva believes that after death, you are restricted in ishet aviv. Imo. Imo mamash. And he says mother means literally the mother. Hainu b'ishto v'lo b'ishet chaveiro. Isn't that the scenario of Eshet Ish? So why are you saying to me you need Imo if Eshet Ish is already covered in the Pasuk? Imo me'anusato. It's a case where it's his mother, but the mother is not married. The birth was a birth out of wedlock. And since that's the case, there is no Eshet Ish over here. The only restriction is the restriction of Imo and not of Eshet Ish. And obviously you can't suggest over here that it's after the father's death. And it's Eshet Aviv lachar mitah. So that can't be the need for the restriction over here after the death of his father, because that was already captured by Aviv, which meant Eshet Aviv, where Rabbi Kiva says that's even Lachar Mitah. But rather, it must be that there's something associated with his mother. And that is his mother, even though she's not an Eshet Ish, or the Eshet Aviv, there is a restriction. But my kamiflegate, what is the source of the machlok between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Kiva? What's driving their drashot over here? Both of them give you a logic for their drashot. What's the underlying reason for that? Rabbi Eliezer Savar, Aviv, Dumya de Imo, Vimo, Dumya de Aviv. Father and mother are equated in the Pasuk, so we want a similar type of restriction. Lo mishkachatla ela ba'achva. The only time we can find something where a father and a mother have erva that is similar in nature is when you're talking about siblings. And so therefore it makes sense to say that we're speaking about the father's sister and the mother's sister, because that's an equation where they have the same relationship and the same restriction. Akiva, mutav ukme be'eshet aviv, dikre ervat aviv. It makes sense to say eshet aviv, who in the Torah is called ervat aviv. The psukim that describe the restriction against eshet aviv say that it's ervat aviv. They call it your father's erva. Lafuke achot aviv, to the exclusion or to preclude the case of the father's sister, your aunt, the share aviv ikre. In the Torah, it calls it She'er Aviv, a relationship or a close relative of your father, Ervat Aviv lo yikre, but it doesn't call it the Erva of your father. So Rabbi Kiva says, look, the Pasuk says Aviv, so take Aviv literally, and either it means father, that we reject because that's already precluded from V'davak V'ishto, V'davak means no homosexuality. So now we're left with what is called Ervat Aviv, even though it's not literally his father. The only other place the Torah calls it Ervat Aviv is in a case of Eshet Aviv. By the father's sister, it calls it Sher Aviv, a relationship, a relative of the father, but but not Ervat Aviv, of directly of the Father. So Rabbi Akiva takes it very literally, and he wants to get the closest thing he can have to Aviv that makes sense. Another Rabbi Eliezer says, you have Aviv and Imo together. I want to get something that joins Aviv and Imo and gives me the same relative for a father as the mother where there's Ervat. So he says that's the father's sister, mother's sister, where you have a similar type of relationship. So the question is, what are they focused on in terms of the drasha of the pasuk? Are they focused on the literalness of Aviv and Imo? Are they focused on the fact that Aviv and Imo were brought together, and what's the equation between the two of them? Tashma. What about Vayikach Amram et Yocheved Dodato? Amram marries his aunt Yocheved, which is something that post Mamad Har Sinai would not be permitted, but prior to Har Sinai he marries his aunt. My love Dodato Mina Aim. How was she his aunt? Now, if Rabbi Eliezer says that an aunt is restricted to a Ben Noach, then forget about the fact that it was pre-Sinai, post-Sinai, it wouldn't have married a Ben Noach would be restricted in marrying his aunt. So now, if you're restricted in marrying your aunt, how did Amram marry his aunt? They were classified as a Ben Noach prior to that time. That's interesting because that is a machloket in general. What was the status of the Avot prior to Har Sinai? Did the Avot have a status of a Ben Noach prior to Har Sinai? Or did the Avot prior to Har Sinai considered to be Jews, but just not with the Torah? They have their own rules or their own laws, but they're not classified as a Ben Noach. Over here, it seems to be that they're classified as a Ben Noach, because we're saying that he would be restricted like a Ben Noach. Now remember that a Ben Noach, all relationships are only determined through a common mother. So that would suggest that Amram was related to Yocheved, meaning that Yocheved was his aunt, because Amram's father, Kehat, who was Levi's son, was Yocheved's brother. Yocheved and Kehat are brother and sister. Question is, how are they brother and sister? Is it because they share a common father? Or is that because they share a common mother? It seems to be that it is because they share a common father, because Levi is the common denominator between Yocheved and Kehat. Kehat is Levi's son, and Yocheved is Levi's daughter. So it seems to be for sure they share a common father. Question is, do they share a common mother? If they share a common mother, then for a Ben Noach, it would be problematic, because they are brother and sister through a common mother. So that's what the Gemara says here. My love, Dodato Minaim. Isn't it because Kat and Yocheved were brother and sister through a common mother? Lo, Dodato Minav. No, they were a brother and sister through a common father. Now that's a given that they were a brother and sister through a common father, Levi. The question was, were they also have a common mother? Gemara suggested at first yes. If that's the case, then that would be a proof against Rabbi Eliezer, because then he married his aunt, who had a common mother with his father. In the end, we say no, Yocheved and Kehat had a common father, they didn't have a common mother, and therefore, even according to Rabbi Eliezer, wouldn't have been restricted for a Ben Noach. You want to tell me, I want to prove Rabbi Eliezer is wrong? You have to demonstrate to me that they have a common mother. You can't do that. You can't demonstrate that they have a common mother, then you can't prove that Rabbi Eliezer is wrong. Rabbi Eliezer could say they didn't have a common mother. Either one of those is a plausible way to explain it, and then that's not a proof against Rabbi Eliezer. Tashma, gamam na achuti bat avihi, ach lo bat imi. When Avram says about Sarah to Abimelech, why he said that she was his sister and not his wife, is because he tries to justify it. How does he justify it? Gamam na achuti bat avi, she is my sister, the daughter of my father, ach lo bat imi, but not the daughter of my mother. Which means that Avram and Sarah, according to this, if you take the pasuk literally, they were brother and sister through a common father, but not brother and sister through a common mother. Michlau, the Bataim Asura. From this, it would imply, like Rabbi Eliezer, that a brother and sister that share a common mother would be restricted. So that sounds like Rabbi Eliezer. V'tisbiru, achoto havai. Was she really his sister? Sarah was his sister. Batachiv havai. She was his niece, not his sister. We came into Hachichu. Now, if you say that, Loshna Mina'av, Loshna Mina'im, Sharia. A niece to a Ben Noach, whether you hold like Rabbi Lezer, whether you hold like Rabbi Kiva, is totally permitted. Not only is it permitted to a Ben Noach, it's even permitted to Israel. There's no restriction against marrying a niece, and the Gemara in many places sees it as a very positive, or the primary marriage that should take place is between a uncle and a niece. So if that's the case, then it doesn't really matter if they're related through the mother or through the father. So then why was Abraham saying that? This is what he's saying to him. Kurva dachot itli bahada me'aba v'lo me'ima. I have a relationship of a sister, or I have a relationship with her through our father, but not through our mother. Meaning that, yes, she's my niece, but the term achiv and achot are used loosely in the Torah to mean a relative or a relationship. Avram and Lot are considered achim. Lavan and Yaakov are also considered to be achim. In both those instances, you're dealing with a nephew-uncle relationship. Yaakov is Lavan's nephew, yet they call each other achim, brothers. And similarly, Avram and Lot are uncle and nephew, and they also use the term achim. So here, when Avram's using the term achot, it doesn't literally mean a sister. It can mean a relative, but a relative that is female, or maybe a sister or niece. That's what he's describing as a chot. And he's just saying, she's a choti, she's my niece, through our common father, but not through a common mother. That means that he was related to his brother through a common father, not necessarily that they had the same mother. This is based on the Midrash Chazal. Avram has two brothers, Nahor, who we hear a lot about, because Nahor has all the children that later on become the wives of Yitzchak and Yaakov through Nahor's family. He also has a brother, Haran. Haran dies and leaves Lot, who he takes care of. Chazal, the Midrash Chazal, says that Haran's children, who are also Milcah and Yiscah, they were also children of Haran, and Yiscah is synonymous with Sarah. And therefore, Sarah was Haran's daughter, or Avram's niece. And that makes that Sarah and Lot were brother and sister. That's the relationship between them. So there, we can't prove anything, because if Sarah is his niece, then it doesn't prove anything about relationships with Bnei Noach. Tashma, Mipnei Malu Nasa Adam Et Bito. Why didn't Adam marry his daughter? After Chava sinned, why does Adam not dump Chava, because she's subject to a death penalty now, and then instead marry his daughter? Today, she's Kain et Achoto. Because if Adam married the daughter, then Cain wouldn't be able to marry her, because it's Ishet Aviv. And then who would Cain marry? So in order that Cain would have someone to marry, meaning his sister, he forewent taking his daughter as a wife. Shnemar, Gemarte Olam Chesed Ibaneth. Because I said that the world was created through Chesed. The Chesed was that Adam did not marry his daughter, but rather allowed that daughter to marry Cain, her brother. And that was the chesed, because in Parshat Arayot, the Torah frames a sister as being a problem. Pasuk says in Kedoshim, V'ish eshe yikach et achoto bat aviv u'bat imo, v'ra'a et ervata, v'hi tireh et ervato, chesed hu, v'nichretu l'enei b'nei amam, ervat achoto gila avono isa. It uses the term chesed over there, and that's because there was a period in time where Hashem permitted a sister to a brother. And that was when the world was first created in order to allow the world to come forth from there. Halav hachi, had it not been for that, asira, it would have been restricted. Meaning that it was only because of necessity over here that we said it is permitted, but otherwise it would not be permitted. Now only according to Rabbi Eliezer is it a sister asura. According to Rabbi Akiva, sister is not asura. So that's really a problem for Rabbi Akiva. But says, no, given the shtarei, once they made it mutar, they made it mutar. So Tosafot says that the chesed here was that even though Chava should have died immediately because of this sin, Mashra adds that this is in between that period of time when she had eaten before she gave it to Adam HaRishon, and Hashem keeps Chava alive in order to allow the fact, in order to have Adam have a wife. But then Adam would have been left out a wife. Not a problem, because he could have married his daughter. On that, the Gemara says that Hashem did a chesed and kept Chava alive in order that Adam would not have to marry his daughter. And then it could go to Cain, and Cain could have someone to marry. But the Rav doesn't love that interpretation, because then it doesn't explain the deal that had it not been for this, then his sister would have been a surah to him. Sounds like what God did in order to do the chesed here was to leave Chava alive, not about the heter for Cain to marry his sister. And then the Ran goes on to explain and suggest that what we would have anticipated is that Adam would have married his daughter, which was mutar, and then had a granddaughter. That granddaughter would have been muteret to Cain. So that would have been the better outcome or situation. Adam should have married his daughter, and then Cain would have married the granddaughter that was the product of that marriage, and then it would be mutar to Cain because they don't share a common mother. His sister and he share a common father, but not a common mother. And then Hashem did a chesed, which is he didn't want to postpone Cain's ability to be mekim zera or dorot after him, and therefore he permitted Cain to marry his sister, even though for Ben Noach that's asura, and had he waited, he could have married the granddaughter or his sister through a common father, but not through a common mother, which would have been muteret. Nevertheless, we postponed it, and that was the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, allowing Cain to accelerate his ability to have children. So there's two aspects of chesed. The gemilat chesed is, number one, Adam did not marry his daughter. Number two is, Cain was permitted to marry his sister. Those are the chesedim. But that implies that otherwise his sister would be asura, and that's like Rabbi Elazar, not like Rabbi Akiva. The answer that the Gemara gives is, kevin d'ishtari ishtari. Akiva says, once Hashem granted permission to Cain to marry his sister, it was not restricted at all. Because it had to be permitted in order to allow the world to start, once we say sister is permitted, it remains permitted for everyone, and there's no restriction against a Ben Noah. Amar Rabuna, kuti mutar bibito. A non-Jew is allowed to marry his daughter. Bim bitomar mipnei molosa adam et bito. So then, if you're going to say to me that there was no restriction, then why didn't Adam Arishon marry his daughter? They shisakayinet achoto mishum olam chesed ibane. Again, he withheld himself, even though it was permitted, in order to allow his son Cain to marry his sister. So now, this statement of Rav Huna is both to Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Kasav Rav Huna lo yofinen she'er areyot mihanach tektivi b'haikra. So what Rav Huna says is we don't extrapolate from the arayot that are written in that pasuk, al ken yazovish et aviv et imo. Those are the arayot that are mentioned there. And it's those dafka that matter, but not anybody else. We don't extrapolate from that. So Rav Huna is saying, both according to Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Akiva, a bat is permitted. And now you have to deal with the fact, well, if bat is permitted, why didn't Adam Arishon marry his bat? That is the chesed that he allowed Cain to marry his sister. So as opposed to the previous version where the reason that Bito was a surah is in order to allow Cain to marry his sister, over here Rav Huna believes that he wouldn't have been permitted to marry his daughter, and it is permitted to a Ben Noach, but the chesed is that Adam Arishon did the chesed by allowing Cain to marry Adam's daughter or Cain's sister. So the question is, who was doing the chesed? Is the chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu by making the bat a surah? Or is it the chesed of Adam HaRishon, who had permission or could have married the daughter, and forwent that to allow Cain to marry his sister? And then, in each of these instances, Rav Huna says that those explanations make sense if you say bito muteret. Because then you have a question as to why Adam HaRishon didn't marry his daughter. And the answer in both those instances, whether it's the Tosafot or the Ran, is that because he wanted to do a chesed to allow Cain to marry his sister. So the other version of Rav Huna is that a kuti may not marry his daughter. Teidash lo nasa Adam et bito. How do you know? Because Adam didn't marry his daughter. Velohi, and that's not true. Altamainu taima kidei shisa Cain et achoto mishum olam chazibane. You can't prove what you're saying. You can't say the reason that Adam didn't marry his daughter is because there was an isur that restricted him. It's because possibly he did it voluntarily because he wanted to leave her available to Cain, his son, to marry. The fact that Adam didn't marry his daughter could come for one of two reasons. It could be that she was restricted to him. Could be because she was permitted, but he still didn't want to marry in order to allow Cain to marry his sister. So you can't prove anything from that. Amar Rav Chista, Eved mutar b'imo, umutar b'bito. An Eved Kenani can marry his mother and can marry his daughter. The reason being, Yatzal Michlal Kuti, when he's made into an Eved Kenani, he goes through a partial conversion. He goes through the mikveh, and he becomes a partial conversion to a Jew. That's why it's Chayav Mitzvot Ke Isha. So that conversion already takes him away from being a Kuti. And so then the restrictions that would apply to a Ben Noach with a mother and a daughter are no longer applicable to him because he's no longer a Kuti. He's gone through that conversion. The Klal Yisrael Loba. But he still hasn't become a full-fledged Jew, by which we would then worry about him marrying his mother and his daughter, because he would say, I'm going from Kedusha Chamura to Kedusha Kala. But he's not a full-fledged Jew yet, so he's not going to make that assumption. Obviously, any other of the Arayot would also be Mutarim. Ki Atar Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Chanina, Ben Noach, Sheichet Shivcha Labdo. Then Noach who designates a Shivcha for his servant. Uba Aleha. And then he sleeps with her. Neharag Aleha. He is killed for that. Me'emat. When does that designation become the equivalent of a marriage? Amar Nachman midkaru la Ravita de Planya. They started calling her the so-and-so's girl. That means she's now associated with that Eved, and that deems her to be off-limits to the Adon, and if the Adon sleeps with her, he's been a chayav mita. Me'emat hatarata. When is she considered to be released? Amar Avuna mishipararu shabashuk. When she starts walking around with her hair uncovered in the shuk. Rashi over here notes that in their day, even the non-Jewish women used to cover their hair. And so a woman with uncovered hair was considered to be not married. So if she demonstrates by uncovering her hair that she's not married, that's the equivalent of a separation here that takes place. So you have a number of difficulties in the statement over here because the question is, what happened or how was this marriage created? We know already that a Ben Noach can only create marriage through what's called Be'ulat Baal, through Biyah. There is no Kiddushin or Erusin for a Ben Noach. There's no Chuppah for a Ben Noach. The only thing that generates a marriage relationship is Biyah. Over here, it says that the relationship is created, She'iched, that he designated the Shivcha for his Eben Kanani. So why is designating the Shivcha have any impact? That question will really be answered by what you think the restriction is. When the Adon then goes and takes this Shivcha, and he's subject to a death penalty, why is he subject to a death penalty? Rashi said earlier he's subject to a death penalty on yesterday's daf because of Gezel. He's stealing the woman, he's stealing the wife away from the Eved, and that's why he's subject to a death penalty. The Ran, commenting on Rashi, says that that means Gezel v'lo eshanish. She's not considered to be a wife of this individual, but rather, she's just considered to be designated for him. Rashi explains in yesterday's daf, it's a difficult Rashi, he says that they never will be married because their biyaz biyat znut, and since their biyaz biyat znut, they're not classified as being married. For any other goy, their biyah would be a biyah that generates marriage, so why should it be different for the Eved Kanani? You might have to answer that a Shivcha Kanani is considered to be promiscuous and doesn't settle down, it doesn't really marry. And that's what the problem is over here, that they're not really married. Despite the fact that they're not married, Rashi says that she's designated enough to be under his auspices, that if the Adon comes and takes the Shivcha at that point in time, it's considered to be Gezel, and he's subject to a death penalty. The Rambam in Mishnah Torah says that the problem is Eshadish. And the Ran then goes on to say that he thinks that that must be what the problem is here. It's a problem of Eshadish, and not a problem of Gezel. And he says, what's the Yichud have to do with over here? So he says that in a normal marriage relationship, then you have two willing parties coming together, and they're getting married, and their biyah, bulat baal, makes them into a marriage or a shadish. In our instance, it's an eved and a shivcha that are being compelled to come together because of their adon. The adon is imposing upon them or putting them together, and now they are married. There, the bi'ah is not successful at creating marriage because the Shivcha Kananit is not considered to be a stable partner in this relationship. The only way she becomes a stable partner in the relationship is in Ichela, if she is designated for him. If the Shivcha Kananit is then told by her Adon that she's going to be solely married to this Eved, then to that together with bi'ah makes it into a full-fledged marriage. So the reason you need Ichud over here, according to the Ran, is to overcome the problem of the Shivcha Kananit, who normally doesn't settle down. So in a normal case, Biyah would be enough. In our case, you need Biyah plus Ichud, because without the Ichud, they would not be considered married, and there would be no Eshet Ish over here. Because she's a Shivcha Kananit, who's promiscuous, who doesn't settle down, the Ichud makes her settle down with this Eved Kanani, makes her into his wife, and then if the Adon takes it, it's a problem of Eshet Ish, and that's why he's subject to the death penalty. That's the way that the Ran learns it. But if you believe that the problem is a problem of Gzela, not a problem of Eshet Ish, and there's no Biyah, or possibly no Biyah over here, it'll actually turn out to be ironic, which is that in a normal marriage situation, a husband and wife are not considered to be husband and wife, even if they create some marriage vows, even if they get together, until there's Biyah, there is no marriage. Yet over here, for the Eved Kanani and the Shifcha Kananit, there will be a marriage, even though there was no Biyah. And that's the way Rashi seems to be learning, that there is some sort of connection between them without the Biyah. That marriage or that connection between them without the Biyah works. Now the reason it might work is because it's imposed by the Adon. And that might be the answer to the problem. Ironically, where you can't create a form of Kiddushin outside of this context for a Ben Noach, here, for an Eved Kanani and Shem Kananit, there is something that looks similar to Kiddushin by Yichud. That be enough? Might be, is that because it's being imposed by the Adon? They're not necessarily in control of their lives, and the Adon, by imposing that they be together or should join together, creates that framework or context that brings them together, even though normally it would not work. Because in the other circumstances, there's no context to create that relationship that would be binding. Over here, where the Adon puts them together, that makes it more binding, even though there's no Biyah. So those are different issues that come up with this and how to explain it. Then we have here, she's considered designated once people call her so-and-so's girl. That makes them designated. Again, depending on whether you think it's Rashi, the Ran, or the other explanations that we gave for Rashi. Then, when is it considered to be divorced? Or when is that ichud broken up? That's broken up when she starts walking around like an unmarried woman, which means that she uncovers her hair. That means that the standard of dress in that time was that married women covered their hair, both Jewish and non-Jewish. And that's why a married woman must cover her hair, or it's considered to be erva. This might support the view of the Aruch HaShulchan that covering of the hair can be determined by the context or the time period. Which is that he says that covering of hair in the time of the Gemara, they had to cover their hair. And if you didn't cover their hair, you can't say Kriyat Shema, you can't do anything, it's considered erva. The Aruch HaShulchan, in defense of those that don't cover their hair, it's really not in defense of those that don't cover their hair, it's in defense of those that daven or have to say tefillot, and the women have their hair uncovered, how is that permissible? What he says is that hair is not necessarily an objective erva, like shok and other areas of the woman that are covered. It is an erva that is determined by the time period. That doesn't change the halacha. The halacha is that a woman who's married must cover her hair. But uncovered hair, is uncovered hair classified as erva or not? That might be determined by the context. If women normally cover their hair, and it's no different than their thighs being covered, so then when they uncover their hair, it's considered to be an exposure of erva. Then if women always go around with their hair uncovered, then over there it may not be an objective erva. And therefore the restriction of saying Kriyat Shema Keneged, the hair of a woman, may not be a problem of erva anymore. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan says in defense of those people that do that, and in the modern era. Again, he's not advocating or justifying not covering the hair. He's just saying that if women today don't cover their hair, maybe that's not classified as an erva. As opposed to objective arayot, where the erva is always an erva. It doesn't matter if women walk around with their thighs uncovered or not. It's still an erva, because it's the objective area of erva. The covenant of hair, the Torah frames the hair erva, is because by the sota, they uncover a hair, which means that normally the woman's hair was covered. So it shows you that the whole source of the erva by hair is the fact that women normally cover it. By shok, we have psukim that say that the woman's beauty is in her shok and those areas that are normally covered. Given that, if you end up in an era or a context where women don't normally cover their hair, maybe it's no longer classified as an erva for things like Kriyat Shema and other items, although it still has the requirement that a married woman cover her hair. That might be supported by what Rashi says over here, that even there, they, even non-Jewish women covered their hair, which made it into an erva because it was normally covered. Amar Blazar Mechanina, Ben Noach Shabal Ishto Shaloka Darka Chayav. A Ben Noach who has relations with his wife, Shaloka Darka, would be culpable, meaning that he'd be Chayav Mita. Shnemar v'davak v'lo shaloka darka. Again here, Rashi says v'davak means that both parties have to get hana'a. So if he has bia with her kedarka, then that's where both parties are going to get hana'a from it. And that's what's permitted. But what's not permitted is where one party is getting hana'a and the other one is not getting hana'a from it. And that's when he has bia with her shaloka darka. That is precluded from v'davak b'ishto. Just like homosexuality is precluded from that, so too, Bia Shaloka Darka should also be precluded for that reason. Rabbi Akiva Eger, the Goat Runchenberg, over here on the side of the Gemara, all bring the fact that Rashi and other places and the Balei Tosafot give a different reason as to why there's a problem Shaloka Darka, not because it's a lacking Hana'ah, but rather because it's, could I say, Erev Onan. It's the activity that Erev Onan engaged in, and Hashem kills them for engaging in that activity. So that shows you that Hashem doesn't want that type of behavior, that type of activity. So now, Gemara says, Amar Rava, mi ika mide de Yisrael lo mechayev, vikuti mechayev. How is it possible that there should be some din where for a Jew it would not be a problem, and for Ben Noach it would be a problem? Meaning that the din of a Ben Noach would be more chamor. Now, as far as punishments are concerned, we're not worried about the fact that Gezel would be punished by Mitah by a Ben Noach, and by a Jew it would not be punished by Mitah, because that's not an issue of severity. Both of them are restricted in Gezel. So the Jew is restricted in Gezel, the Goy is restricted in Gezel. The question is, what happens when you do steal? That's a different question. But here you would have a situation in which it's completely mutar to the Israel, and it's a sword to the Ben Noach. Why should that be the case? How can you have a case where a Jew is in a position that is more lenient than that of a Goy? Again, not with regards to punishment, with regards to the Isur. El Amar Rava Ben Noach Shabala Ish Dechaveiro Shalok Kedarka Patur. Now, so the answer is no. And Ben Noach is allowed to have relations with his wife. Shalok Kedarka. The problem here, or the exclusion of the Pasuk, comes to a case where there's adultery. That in an adulterous relationship, if the Biyah is done Kedarka, then he's in violation of Davak Bishto Velo Be'eshet Chameiro. That's a violation of taking another person's wife. On the other hand, if it is done Shalok Kedarka, that is not a violation of Eshet Ish for a Ben Noach. My time, Bishto Velo Be'eshet Chameiro. The limud of making an Eshet Ish Asura comes from the word Ishto Velo Eshet Chameiro. And there it says, V'davak Velo Shalok Kedarka. Davak means that they do it in the normal way, not shalok edarka. As opposed to a Jew, where we learn out from Mishkevei Isha, that it doesn't matter by arayot, whether it's kedarka or shalok edarka, it's restricted. That we don't have by Ben Noach. Ben Noach only has the Davak be Ishto. So Davak modifies Ishto v'lo eshet chaveiro and tells you only by Dveka is there a problem of Eshet Ish. Without Dveka, there's no problem of Eshet Ish. That means that shalok edarka would be patur. So now, interestingly here, Balei Tosafot deal with something that really comes up in the end of the second parak in the Darim, the last stop in the second parak in the Darim, which is the permissibility of a husband to engage his wife in relations that are not kedarka. And so here the Balei Tosafot say that from our Gemara, it seems like it is permissible. And he says that from the Gemara in the Darim, it also seems that way. But what about the problem that is behavior like Ervonan? And Rashi already told us that Hashem is not happy with that type of behavior. How can you condone that behavior for a Israel if Ervonan were punished by death for engaging in such activity? So the Balei Tosafot say over there that they always engaged with Tamar in that way because they didn't want her to become pregnant. So they were Mashchit Zera and they did not have Biyah with her Kedarka, because they didn't want to ruin her beauty, they didn't want to have children necessarily through her, Onan didn't want to have Yibum with her, because the baby wouldn't be his, so for whatever their reasons are, they didn't want her to be pregnant, and they were having Biyah with her Shalok Kedarka, which is, B'motzi Shifat Zera Levatala, or Hashchatat Zera, over there Hashem punishes for that. But Balei Tosafot would say that if it's an occasional item, or something that happens every once in a while, that's not considered to be the problem of Erva Onan, and that's what's permissible to a Jew in a Jewish marriage. Amir Chanin, Ovi Kuchavim Shinkat Yisrael Chayav Mita. Ovi Kuchavim that hits a Jew is subject to a death penalty. Shneamar, Vayin Kol Vako, Vayar Kien Ish, Vayachet HaMitzri. Moshe goes out of the palace and sees the Mitzri who hit the Jew, then Moshe takes retribution on him by killing the Mitzri. Only reason he'd be allowed to or permitted to kill the Mitzri is if that what the Mitzri did was subject to a death penalty. What did the Mitzri do? It hit a Jew. So you see from that Ovi Kuchavim Shinkat Yisrael is Chayav Mita. Vamre Chanina Suter Lo O Shel Yisrael. Someone who slaps the face of a Jew and he hits his cheek. Ki'ilu Suter Lo O Shel Ashkina. It's as if he slaps the cheek of a Kodesh Baruch Hu Kibiyachol. Shneamar Mukesh Adam Yala Kodesh. So with the sin of man, he undermines that which is Kodesh. That's the literal translation of the Pasuk. But here, the way that, as Rashi explains over here, the Gemara is darshing it, Hanokeshet Adam, that someone who causes a stumbling for another person, meaning that he does something to Adam, And here the Gemara says, Adam, et netzoni, tzon mariti, Adam atem kurim Adam. Adam refers to the Jews because in Yechezkel, it calls Bnei Israel Adam. And so for many drashot throughout Shas, we learned that Adam refers to a Jew and not to non-Jews. That's the drasha of Rabbi Shimon. We'll see that there is an alternate view that doesn't say that, and we'll see that later on in the Gemara. But because of that, Mokesh Adam, Yala Kodesh, the one who hits the Adam, who's referring to Bnei Israel, Yala Kodesh, is as if he struck a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The word Yala, then they're learning here, like lo'eh, like the cheek, is as if he has slapped the face of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, ki b'yachol. Amar Yesh Lakesh, Mevgei Yadol L'chamero, someone who raises his hand up against his friend, Avu Pish Lo Yiko Nikra Rasha. Even if he doesn't hit him, just the mere raising of the hand is called a Rasha. Shenamar, again, from that story in Shmot by Moshe leaving the palace. Vayomer l'Rasha, lama takeh reyacha. Over there he sees two Jews, Nitzim, fighting. And he says to the one that's going to hit his friend, Rasha, lama takeh reyacha. Lama hikita lo ne'emar. I didn't say, why did you hit your friend? Ela lama takeh, in the future tense. Why will you hit your friend? So, Avu Pish Lo Yiko Nikra Rasha. Despite the fact that he had yet to hit him, the fact that he raised his hand to hit him, Moshe already calls him a Rasha. Ziri Amar Rabbi Chanina Nikra Choteh. Not only is he a Rasha, he's also called a sinner. Shenemar V'imlo Lakachti B'Chazaka. Because it says by the Bnei Eli, that if they said to the people bringing korbanot, give us the meat before it's even cooked, and if you don't give it to us, we're going to take it by force. And then when Hashem speaks to Eli about this, the narrative over there says that the sin of the Bnei Eli was very grave, or very great. And you see here, they have the chatat together with the chazakah. Now the chazakah over there is they took it by force, means that they basically threatened those individuals. Threatening them is the equivalent of raising your hand against them to threaten them. Once they threatened them, they took the meat because the people were too scared. Ravona Amar Tikatseitz Yado. Person who raises his hand against his friend, his hand should be cut off. Shinemar Uzroa Rama. The upheld hand or the outstretched hand, Tishaver, will be shattered or broken. Ravona Katz Yado. Ravona actually had a situation in which he cut off the hand of an individual. Rashi claims over here, Medama Chacha Yeragila Kotet Chamero. Somebody who was problematic and he was hitting or injuring his friend over and over again. He was raising a hand against his friend. So he finally fined him by doing such. Rashi says here that this is a Beit Din invoking their extrajudicial powers that they're given, which we saw earlier in the Masechta, Makim Be'onshin, Shemelo Min HaTorah. That a Beit Din can do what it sees fit in order to be good there, in order to make sure that things work properly, and that people treat each other properly, and the laws of the Torah are upheld. And so over here, he took an extrajudicial approach and cut off the guy's hand because he couldn't control himself. He kept hitting his neighbor or his friend. And for that reason, he cut off his hand. That's the way Rashi learns it. So Rashi's learning it, shalom min adin. It was a knas. It was an extrajudicial action. On the other hand, Tosafot disagrees and says that he thinks it's me'ikar adin. That it's something that comes out of the din. That when Rav Huna says cut off the hand, that literally meant that that was the din. That's what should have happened over here based on the pasuk that we just brought. Tosafot says that they're based on the pasuk here, and he proves it from the Gemara Nidah, which has another thing there where you have to cut off your hand if a person's hand goes below their waist, meaning that it's involved with their private parts. Then over there it says Yado Tikatzeitz, that the hand should be cut off. And Tosafot over there says again, taken literally, it's minadin, the hand should be cut off. Although Tosafot here does differentiate between something that is an occasional incident or an outlier versus something that's regular behavior. And he says Rav Huna himself, when it came to Hanan Bisha, he fined him and he didn't cut off his hand. That's because there, it happened once or happened twice, that's enough that you can fine him. But someone who's a recurring offender, over there, Katz Yada, according to the Baal Tosafot, is the right punishment and the just punishment. That a person like that, there's no rectifying the situation until they're buried. Shnemar, v'ish zroa lo haaretz. The strong man or the bullying individual, lo aretz. The only thing right for him is the ground or the earth, meaning tvura. The land is only given over to those people that are strong. The one who is strong, the aretz is for him. Now, the truth is that the literal reading of the pasuk is that it's a rhetorical question, which is Ish Zroa Lo Haaretz, the one who's strong, the land belongs to him. But that's not the case. I mean, that Hashem is saying the strong man doesn't have the Haaretz. Over here, we're reading it not as a rhetorical question, but as a statement, which is Ish Zroa. The only thing right for the man who's strong or raises his hand against others is Haaretz, is Kvura, or land ownership is only good for those that are strong. And the reason being is, as Rashi notes over here, because when it comes to land ownership, Minesha Tagaraba, people fight over land all the time. Because animals come and graze there or ruin his land. And then thieves come and steal from the land. And then others claim that he doesn't really own it. He doesn't have title to the land. So the only person who can hold on to the land is someone who's got a strong side to them and can withstand all of the barrage of issues that come and try to take away his ownership. Whether through animals grazing there, eating his stuff, walking in there, thieves coming and taking that which is his, or people making claims against his title or his ownership of the land. One who works his land will have bread that satisfies him. If a person makes himself like a slave or servant to the ground, then he will be successful and have sufficient food to eat and be satisfied. If he doesn't do that, then he will not succeed at planting. Meaning that being a farmer is an extremely hard job and requires tremendous dedication and hard work. If you put in all the effort and the work, then the field will produce. You will be rewarded with the fruits of your labor. But if you want to do it in a haphazard way or a less than committed way, it won't succeed in the end because it takes a huge commitment and work ethic in order to have the land produce. All right, we'll stop here, three lines from the bottom of Nunchet Amud Bet.